Finance and Leadership, FTI's Financial Services Podcast. FTI is a global advisory firm. We help organizations manage change, mitigate risk, and resolve disputes. I'm your host, Tilcia Toledo. I have over 25 years of experience in the financial services industry. This show is about the people I've met along the way and leading during uncertain times. You will hear from finance executives, law firm partners, dedicated government professionals, and many others.
Today, we're going to do something different. There is a lot of talk about artificial intelligence, commonly referred to as AI. So I'm bringing to you the first of a series of episodes focused on AI. Our guest is Joe Knight. He is a senior managing director at FTI Consulting and has over 15 years of experience in data analytics and decision science. Joe provides technical consulting services in the areas of electronic discovery, litigation and investigation support, advanced data analytics, machine learning, data visualization, and business intelligence. He has helped organizations with complex IT landscapes assess risk and implement controls. The purpose of this episode is to provide an overview of AI. We will go into more details in subsequent episodes. Please enjoy. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tilcia. Appreciate you having me.
So I want to start with just a broad overview question, because AI is not new. It's been around since at least the 1950s, but we're hearing so much more about it right now. So let's start with, what is AI and what is not AI? Can you give us a definition?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think one of the most challenging points to kind of looking at AI and looking at the AI regulatory environment right now is that there really is no widely agreed on definition of AI or general AI by governments or industry partners at a global scale, which really kind of makes it a little bit more difficult to establish clear and adaptive, you know, frameworks and governance and sort of regulations. But I always like to start these by taking a step back and kind of looking at a couple key terms in this field. Even above AI, we talk about the general field of data science, which is a wide-ranging field that goes beyond exploratory analysis and statistics, and it uses algorithms, mathematical formulas to really extract, evaluate, and visualize both structured and unstructured data. Data science is then broken down into further components, such as big data, data mining, data modeling, and artificial intelligence. AI, the definition, is the capability of a computer system to mimic human cognitive functions, such as learning, problem solving, and reading. And then machine learning is the application of AI that focuses on the use of data and algorithms to imitate how humans learn, which gradually improves with accuracy over time. People have been using machine learning concepts for a long time. So for example, like linear regression models like have been used for decades and decades. And those are used to predict the relationship between two variables or factors by fitting those variables to, you know, a straight line. And you probably learned about that in your stat class, even back in high school. So that technically is a machine learning technique. Really kind of where the world's going now and what's been in the news over the last year is sort of the context of ChatGPT and other generative AI tools is this concept of large language models. And while they've been around for a while, they've really been pushed into the limelight more so because of, one, the amount of data that's now available for these models to use across the internet, and also the kind of computing power and the CPU nature of the technology that we have today to really kind of build these at scale. But LLMs, to define them, you know, generate natural language texts from large amounts of data, and they use deep neural networks to learn from billions or even trillions of words to produce text on any given topic or domain. The large language models are the foundational components to things you hear about, you know, Bard or ChatGPT or some of the other large language models and generative AI tools out there. And I recognize I haven't quite gotten to your question yet about what AI is and what AI is not. So in the context, there's a lot of discussion about kind of rule-based engines. Those are not AI. When you're applying simple filters to a data set that says, you know, exclude all transactions or data that are coming from a specific geography or over a specific amount. There's a lot of kind of, I think, misinterpretation of rule-based functions that are being classified as AI. But AI is really sort of twofold now. It's traditional versus generative. Generative is AI that operates in a deterministic manner. So it follows explicit rules and instructions set by human programmers. And a lot of traditional AI are things like Siri, virtual assistants. You can also talk about the e-commerce platform. So when you're on Instagram or another social media and you're getting all these advertisements for something you might have mentioned or thought in your head, you think it's sometimes like that's all sort of traditional AI. And then the generative AI, the big difference there is that is lies in sort of the objective and the functioning of generative AI, because it goes beyond this limitation of human programmers and rule-based sets and strives to create entirely new data sets that resembles human-created content. And that's a big point I want to make with generative AI, is that it's not an encyclopedia. The point of those tools is to sound like a human, or generate images the way a human would, or compose music the way a human would. And so that's why I think that there needs to be that distinction, not just what is AI and what is not AI, but what is traditional AI versus what is generative AI. So a bit of a loaded answer to your question, but I think it's important to set that benchmark going forward.
So Joe, that's really helpful. Let's talk a little bit about some of the use cases in AI. You've touched on a couple of them, but especially when I think about financial services and the way people may use it, for example, in credit scores or how to issue credit. So I'm curious about what are you seeing use cases in the work that we do, in the work that financial institutions do, and also just generally as an individual, just going about your daily life?
You know, I think especially sort of kind of in the fintech world or the financial service world, and again, it goes back to that traditional AI, but you also have to think that a lot of this is driven by more and more data that's available both from internal and external sources. So you see a lot of traditional AI and predictive algorithms being developed to attempt to measure risk more completely and accurately on who financial services and institutions are lending to, whether that's, you know, credit or mortgage or any type of lending product. But it's the ingestion of more and more data sources to kind of create some sort of risk score that's really driving the appetite to provide credit and also to price that as well. So I see that a lot, and I've seen that over the years. Sort of the new generative AI and large language models, what we see a lot of that used for is whether you're using sort of a service or you're creating your own LLMs, it's for contract generation, more advanced analytics on things like customer sentiment analysis and help desk and audio file and call logs of people, you know, calling in to complain or talk about some sort of customer service area. And then it's also really helpful for like comparing two documents, right? So if you have you've got to think about the security and the privacy here, but under the context that you have a private LLM at your disposal and you need to compare two large contracts or two large briefs or something like that, you can use generative AI and large language models as a tool. I'll say a tool because it shouldn't be relied upon yet, to really kind of compare and contrast what are the main arguments in these 200-page documents and what are the key differences. I think those are things that you can do on a day-to-day basis in the context of the financial service industry. I also use it to help generate birthday messages for my mother-in-law, which has been super helpful. So that's kind of nice because I don't think we have to worry about quite the privacy or security as well, but it's interesting to see how you can streamline some of the busy work that you need to do in your day-to-day life using some of these generative AI tools.
So Joe, you mentioned privacy and security. So naturally that makes me think about the regulatory environment in which we're operating. We saw that the White House issued an executive order. We're also seeing differences between how the US versus the European Union is looking to regulate AI. Can you talk to us a little bit more about what you're seeing?
So the EU Act, which was the first, you know, I would say proposed legislation in this space, it aimed to make Europe a hub for developing fair and trustworthy AI by laying down sets of principles and rules that everyone could conform to. It defined, you know, the key actors that includes, you know, importers, distributors, product manufacturers, healthcare, But then it also really kind of talked about this risk classification perspective. You know, there's different risk areas for depending on the type of model and the service that you're using, and depending on what industry you're in or what type of AI system you're building, you sort of have considerations around that specific risk model. The US has taken, I would say, a much different approach, right? And if you kind of look at the history of it, it was the AI regs really first started from almost a use case driven area. So on things like biometric technology, there are certain states that put in different regs about how a lot of it was privacy based, but how those AI tools were using your, you know, highly personalized data in the use in certain biometric systems. And then you saw things about self-driving cars, right? And regulations around that. But, you know, I think the Biden Act is really interesting because it's more putting the onus on specific industries and specific sectors to really define how is AI being used in the context of that industry or sector, and then looking at, you know, those different agencies to provide those rules more in place. And I think, you know, from the financial service perspective, if you've unpacked the Biden executive order, there are a lot of really kind of interesting things to read about. It's pushing agencies, including Treasury, HUD, to undertake a variety of actions to kind of implement the key principles of the executive order and the goals. It also makes recommendations for the FTC and the CFPB to really kind of drive specific litigation in those, or specific actions in those areas. So for example, the executive order instructed HUD and encouraged the CFPB to issue guidance within 180 days, i.e. by April 2024, to combat unlawful discrimination enabled by automated or algorithmic tools used to make decisions about access to housing and other real estate related transactions. You know, I think that this is something that these agencies have been thinking about for quite some time, or, you know, even enacting. And really, this has just been sort of how the order is trying to bring all that together and push the principles around explainability, security, reliability, interpretability, and transparency of AI systems into those specific industries and sectors.
And, you know, you mentioned explainability, which is one of the big things that comes up a lot, especially since I tend to work with organizations that are facing some kind of regulatory scrutiny, and the regulators are very, very focused on explainability. Can you talk a little bit about when you work with clients, how do you help them manage that part of this whole AI space? In terms of whether it's looking at their models, how they document the information, how they test, you know, the models once they're up and running. Tell us a little bit about that part of the aspect of working.
Yeah, that's a great question, Tulsia. I think that, well, I know that the financial service industry has sort of been at the forefront of model governance and testing based on, you know, like ECOA and other regulations that they've been doing for a number of, or other kind of requirements from regulators that they've had for a number of years. And so I think sort of the concepts of the model governance, both sort of at a macro level and also a micro level. So how is an algorithm designed? How is it trained? Making sure it's not trained on any sort of data that has, you know, existing biases. And then also more importantly, how is it monitored and how it is tested? So testing for potential bias, that's been done for years using tools like regression analysis. There's other statistical techniques that you can use to really sort of test the distribution of the applicant class against the distribution of the approved class and looking for statistical disparate impact. The challenge has become all the third-party vendors that are packaging up these different algorithms and the so-called black box. So I think the consideration and what we are talking to a lot about clients with is that you can still test those algorithms, even if you don't have full awareness or you didn't build them, right? Like you just need the output data to really do that. And I also think it's really important to engage in with counsel and really kind of look at the contract for how you draw up the agreements with a lot of these services that provide, you know, AI models, third-party vendors that provide AI models, because there needs to be a little bit of back and forth. It's, you don't necessarily need to look at the code or anything like that, but having a little bit more transparency into their model governance procedures, how they train and how they monitor, is really important for any client, including financial service institutions that are using those algorithms, to ensure that they are developed using sound principles and you have that transparency.
And Joe, as we're seeing how quickly AI is being adopted in so many various different areas, and, you know, as we talked about, it's been around for a while, but it's just that now you have so much more data, so much more computing power. We're hearing about it all the time. What I'm curious about is, given that you spend so much time day in, day out in data and analytics and looking at AI, what is your outlook for the industry?
That's a great question. I mean, I think that the industry will continue to use traditional AI in various ways to improve customer experience, to kind of manage risk, and use the more and more amount of data that's available to them to do that. I do think that the industry and financial services can really benefit from what I'll call private large language models, or building their own internal large language models, because many organizations still don't harness even 80% of the available information that they have to them. And I've talked to some clients who are already either building for specific use cases large language models to ingest, you know, massive amounts of internal data to really drive some of those functions that we talked about before. So improved customer service, improved process around developing and analyzing contracts, improved, you know, customer analysis using more available unstructured data. So I think obviously when you have kind of this transformative technology like AI and generative AI, organizations should and need to figure out how to harness that for their competitive advantage. And when you think about how to best control for that, or how to do that in the most responsible way, you need to take a top-down approach. But it's also interesting because AI is a very like kind of democratic field, and there's lots of open source tools out there that so many people at very low levels of the organization use. So it's really forming a committee at a higher level, but using tools like surveys and other governance and frameworks to really try to get a handle on, where is AI being used? Is it being used securely? Is it being used kind of within the privacy standards that we need to? And then really kind of thinking about from an organizational perspective, what are our core use cases in how we want to use AI? And I think that's where organizations really need to think, because it's all at the end of the day based on the data that you have available and how you can make that data available. So it's not this magical crystal ball that is going to solve every complex investigation that you ever have to do or answer any question that you need to do. But with the right tools in place and evaluation, you can figure out the right use cases that are going to be most strategic and impactful to your business. And then implementing sound development principles to really bring those use cases to fruition to really help drive your competitive advantage.
No, that's excellent points all around. And well, here at Finance and Leadership, we do believe that leaders are readers. So I'm curious, Joe, during your downtime, what are the books that you read? Are there specific authors that follow? And it doesn't have to be AI specific. You know, it can be broad. So we're just curious about what are the things that you read?
I try to read a little bit more from a professional standpoint, but I find myself falling asleep kind of quickly because I do have two young children. I recently read a book called The Book of Why, which is, you know, the science of cause and effect. And it was written by a computer scientist. And it was kind of really interesting because it sort of talks about sort of like these interesting sort of statistical and philosophical points and how they kind of translated in our society. And it was an interesting read. It did take me a little bit to get through it. But other than that, I'm a bit of a science fiction nerd, and I'm reading the trilogy called Red Rising, and I'm on the third book right now, which is called Morning Star. And it is, if you're a fan of, I would say, Harry Potter, The Hunger Games, and Game of Thrones, it's somehow, and Star Wars, it sort of mixes all of those genres in one, and it's an interesting read. So that's what I'm reading right now.
That's a major endorsement right there.
Yes.
Well, Joe, is there anything that I haven't covered or that I haven't asked that you would like to share with the audience? I realized that this was a very high level introduction, in essence, to AI. And this is probably going to be one of a couple of episodes that I will devote to AI. But is there anything else you want to share?
No, I don't think so. And you know, there's a lot of great information out there. There's new technologies that are coming out all the time. And so I think it's important for people to be cautiously optimistic about the new generative AI tools out there. And I think most of the organizations and clients and even law firms I talk about are really looking at these things from a tool perspective as opposed to a solution, at least in this point of time. So they can be used to really sort of aid in what has historically been more manual tasks. But it's really important to validate the outputs of some of these large language models to ensure that you're getting all of the facts correct and you don't have sort of what's called hallucinations. Because again, the point I made at the beginning is that a lot of them are not encyclopedias. They're probabilistic language models, right? They're trying to sound like a human using largely fact-based evidence, but it can still create what are called hallucinations or things that really aren't grounded in fact.
And I've seen a couple of those articles about hallucinations. And so it's definitely important to make sure that people are validating the information that they get.
Exactly.
Sounds like the trust but verify.
Yes, that's a great, I like that. Trust but verify, Tulsia. Makes a lot of sense.
Excellent. Well, Joe, thank you for coming on the show. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please email financeandleadership@fticonsulting.com.